Okay, call the meeting order at 3:30. Everybody's here. No public comment. Any minutes that you saw, Bill?
Nope. Minutes look good. I make motion to accept.
Minutes are good. Presentations, finance update.
We can move right to discussion items.
Oh, let's move to discussion items. Solar panels.
Sue?
Yes.
Sue, you're good.
Okay. I'll start by reviewing the last finance committee meeting, which was on June the 5th. We talked about two solar systems that we've researched, and it's the fixed ground mount and the single axis tracker. The proposed solar system would eliminate the energy portion, but we'd still have to pay the demand charges of the peaks the plant experiences at night from running the pumps. And the demand charge, in case you forgot, is the maximum amount of power drawn offline in any 15-minute intervals. And PG&E charges according to whatever the highest peak usage is during that for the entire month. So they have over 2,880 opportunities to pick the rate to charge. So that's the demand charge. We also talked about the power purchase agreement. If the town would decide to go with an agreement, it would be no money down. You'd pay less for electricity than if we stayed with PG&E alone. Plus, getting credit for the grid at night.
Just so I'm with you, I'm not sure where we are.
Oh, I have not talked about
it yet.
I'm just giving you a verbal review.
I'm listening.
Yeah, just, okay. So the power purchase agreement, the credit for the grid at night is a huge advantage. The option to renew the contract comes up usually after 10 years, and the buyout for the system at that point is at a discounted amount. Payment on a loan would be considerably less than the original upfront amount for the system. How the process would work is the town advertises that we want a PPA, and the most common way for the town to advertise is to put out an RFP and include in the scope that the town wants a power purchase agreement for one new system and mention the details in that RFP. We also talked about the net energy metering, which is NEM. the contractor that I spoke with, which is Bob, and he is with Bob Parkins, and he's with Renewable Energy Consultants. He highly recommends using a NEM. He says there's a big advantage. The concept is if we generate part of our own power, what we don't use immediately, the unused portion goes back, or the unused power rather, goes back onto the grid, and then we have a special meter that goes backwards and forwards. PG&E comes out and puts on that special meter, and there's a credit for what goes onto the lines. And at night, the solar system's not running, and we're drawing all the power from PG&E. We would have credit for those charges since we put more on the lines during the day. Bob wasn't exactly sure of the cost to get the NEM started, but he believes it would be about $1,400. We also talked about how long it would take to get the system up and running, and we figured out that it would be about 32 weeks from developing the RFP to getting the contract out. And then once the contract was out, it's 4 to 5 more months till it's up and running.
4 to 5
months? 4 to 5 more months.
Months.
Mm-hmm. We also asked, you were also asking about grant incentives, and Bob says that he hasn't heard of any grant incentives and he doesn't work on them because it takes too much time. He had told me that his experience is that people may find like a $500,000 grant. The bad side of the grant is that they lead us on proposals. We may have to hire someone to write the proposals. It takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of money to do that. And there's also reporting requirements all along the way with that. And it takes time to provide the report and cost to pay someone to do that. So his quote was, there's no such thing as free money. So that's the summary. Any questions on the summary? Want to go back over? Okay.
What was the cost?
Okay. Well, that's next.
Oh, okay.
Glad you asked. Okay, so now you'll see your sets or little packet of spreadsheets. The costs are in the top, the little amber color box goes down on each of the spreadsheets. But the difference between the spreadsheets, before we go farther, is you'll notice on the very top line above the cells where they start, it'll show like 10 cents, or 0.1, 0.13, and 0.15. Do you all see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is 10 cents, per kilowatt hour, or that's the utility rate. And then 13 would be the utility rate, and 15 would be the utility rate. He said he was very conservative on the spreadsheets, but he wanted to, he doesn't want to overstate the value of solar, so he wanted to make sure that we got a whole array of what the rates might be. Okay. I'll go over through the questions that you had asked for you to get information on from the last meeting. The question was, what the dollar amount for the O&M costs showed a negative amount. So on the first sheet, the one with the 10 cents, if you go down to the line O&M costs, it shows a negative amount. But it was added into the cash flow amount. And so these are all corrected sheets. He said that was an error, so he corrected that. I don't know if you remember that. Someone
I think you spotted an error about math.
I'm trying to read them. Trying to wind back my recollection here. So we would have an O&M savings of $15,000 in year one.
Let's see. The O&M costs are subtracted from the value of the generated energy.
The O&M is a cost.
Right, it is.
So no matter what we do, Bernie will always have an O&M cost.
The last spreadsheet, though, that we had from the last meeting, it was added in instead of subtracting.
So is he saying that the O&M cost is somehow reduced by $15,000 a year?
No, that's the average cost. That would be the average cost. Yeah, so it's a cost.
So if it's a cost, how do you deduct it from the... Okay. So if we have... I'm looking at your first sheet there, just as an example. It shows the value of the generated energy at $190,000.
Right.
But he's saying you're going to have to pay $15,000 in O&M that year.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Now I'm with you.
But the last sheet had the error on it, so these are correct.
Okay.
Bob said that the likelihood that the returns may be better than what's shown because he's very conservative on the spreadsheets. Any other questions on that correction that he made? The next question was regarding the net energy metering, or the NEM, that Bob thought it would be about $1,400 to get, and whether this cost would be the entire system or the cost for the NEM per solar panel. The answer, he said, is that the amount would be for the whole system and not just per panel. So that to get the NEM started, it's $1,400 approximately for the whole system.
So there's no other cost other than they're installing a meter that's going to run both ways.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's after you've installed your solar. Well, you have to install the solar first, otherwise it can't run backwards.
Yeah, that would make sense, yes.
So there's no upfront out-of-pocket cost for the installation?
If we go with a PPA, so the PPA is there's no upfront cost because we would go with a power purchase agreement.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's the loan, and then you can pay that. You have the option to pay that off at the when the contract comes up for renewal, which is normally about 10 years. And he says most people do pay it off at that point rather than letting it continue on.
Did they give you that rate? What did you think so we would have to pay off in that? Or what's the payoff rate? Did he put that in there? Possibly?
It would be the investment on a PPA and then payable in 10 years at a discounted rate. So I don't know what that would be. I didn't figure that part out.
That's okay.
Okay. You had wanted to know how the demand charge fits into the calculation of the cash flow dollar amount. The cash flow is the energy charge only, and we can't figure what the demand charge would be since that use number is unknown. You had asked to check with Bernie regarding the use of demand charges and how Veolia would handle that with the solar system. And Bernie had said that he has had previous power experience with the solar system, and he said that there would be a converter box that stores the energy and batteries, and that the treatment plant pulls off the power when needed. He said the biggest influx of power is when the plant aerators run, and that there's a higher demand in the summer and less in the winter and fall.
Which works out good because we get bright sun in the summer,
right,
and the
right,
clouds in the winter, so it works quite well.
And then the ones I've built in the past, it's stored the power, so that when, like when it got dark, it can pull that energy first before we go back to the power grid.
Bob had said too that the great majority of systems don't have batteries. There's an inverter that takes all of the power from the solar system and converts to the power we need.
Well, I was just going to ask that when you said the battery, we wouldn't be looking at that. But
yeah.
Okay.
You would get credit for that part.
Absolutely.
While I was talking with Bernie to get the answer to the previous question, Bernie had some questions for me to ask Bob as follow-up as well, so I'll give you those questions too. Since both tilt systems, regarding both tilt systems, does that mean that they both follow the sun? And the tilt, fixed tilt 1.25 megawatt is a fixed with panels pointed due south or a couple of degrees east or west of south. They're fixed at 25 degrees and do not move. This system is 25% larger than the tracker. And the tracker is the 1.0 megawatt, and that follows the sun and has a smaller footprint.
Higher cost and higher maintenance.
Yes.
Right. Bernie had asked, during a power outage, will the plant's generator kick on or switch to PG&E energy? What would that look like during a power outage? By regulation, when the grid goes down, the solar system goes down as well. Utilities insist on this. If the solar system is operating when the power goes down, energy would go back on the grid. And if someone went out and touched it, they could be electrocuted. Bernie reported that PG&E has issued power outage warnings for Tier 1, 2, and 3. Bernie said that the town is Tier 1 and that power is fed from Tier 2, and we could be affected. If this happens, the town's power could be off for 2 to 3 days. How would that affect us? The town would run the generators. We would inform the Air Resource Board that it wasn't our fault that PG&E had shut the power down. Part of the argument is the generator was running so long and no fault of our own, required to maintain the health of our community. Bob said that no one is going to fight with us using a generator.
And the generators, they can run for an indefinite period.
Yeah, but we're only allowed to run 100 hours per year by permit. And yeah, once you go over there, the Air Board are fine.
But that 100 hours is for maintenance and testing and exercising, not for production.
And PG&E literally could have a rolling blackout for 2 to 3 days.
Yes.
Wow.
That's why
they're
really talking about the
for complaining.
Yeah. That's why they're talking about these emergency preparedness kits.
Good thing you don't have air packs.
Hope you have good insulated refrigerators.
Bernie had asked, will the generator run more with solar? And the answer was there will be no difference in the future as in the past. Solar system has nothing to do with running of generators. Bernie had reported that there's a switchgear at the plant and that it runs the power. Would the solar system need a switchgear as well? And the answer was there's a way to do that electronically. There will be a disconnect switch inside of a cabinet, and it can be turned off manually. The power comes to the main panel. They would tie the solar into the panel from outside to the inside at the panel. This is part of the design system. The committee had asked how many PG&E accounts the town has, and I checked, and there are 52 PG&E accounts, and they're all grouped into 8 different account numbers.
And they were all what?
Grouped into 8 different account numbers.
8
different. With 52 individual accounts. You had asked that I check with the grant company that we had utilized in the past, which was California Consulting LLC, to see if they knew of any grants available. I checked with them, and they're unaware of any grants. You had asked if I could talk with other public agencies and local school districts that have solar systems to get their feedback. I checked with Napa Sanitation District. And I wrote their quote, we installed a 1 megawatt solar array a few years back through a PPA. We're relatively competent. We're a relatively competent organization used to implementing complex projects. However, we still chose to hire a third-party consultant to help us with the RFP, technical evaluation, contract negotiation, and interconnection process. It's a specialized and very technical thing to do, especially if you want to install at multiple sites or trying to integrate specific programs like the self-generation incentive program or the renewable energy self-generation bill credit transfer. It was extremely helpful to have a knowledgeable advocate working for us during the process rather than working for the solar PPA company. His ability to analyze the 15-minute usage data and model the NDP or NPV savings for each of the proposals we received was invaluable, and he suggested changes in the PPA contract language that helped the district, and that was pertaining to performance guarantee language, buyout provisions, response time expectations, and other items. They interviewed Gopal Shankar from Recolti Energy to help us. He had said that the person that worked with them has a genius level understanding of electricity market, solar installation, PPA terms, and interconnection process. He said it was well worth the consulting fee to do this right. He definitely saved us money in the long run. Did you want to know what self-generation incentive program for renewable energy self-generation bill transfer information is?
Still need the details.
Okay. And then Liberty Union High School District, the district hired Borrego Solar. The district found it very beneficial to have a solar system. They've seen a decrease in their PG&E bills. They have not run into any maintenance issues. Their vendor comes out 1 to 2 times per year for maintenance and cleaning of the panels. I was told at Freedom High School, the solar panels were installed over the parking area, so the students and teachers enjoy shady parking. And in Brentwood at Liberty High School, the solar panels are installed closer to the fields, and the district issues in state rebates. And the person I spoke with is not sure of the paperwork process.
So there was no information on the percentage of savings?
No, I did not. They did not have that.
So if we look at the projections, even at the 10-cent rate,
yes,
assuming we'll be conservative. Quite a ways before we see savings.
On the 1 megawatt, it's between your 8 and 9.
Right.
And then the other is between 9 and 10. Right.
And that's just because of the inefficiency of the fixed.
Right.
Unfortunately, we don't have any feedback from the other organizations in terms of whether they saw projections realized better or worse.
I would love to see some we know there's people out there. The Heritage High School put in solar many years ago, I say more than 3 or 4 years. So they have to have statistical data that says what their savings is based on what it was prior to. Did they save 30%? I mean, those are numbers we can now take and formulate some idea of what we're going to save. I would like to see that. I think you know, everybody's saying, you know, I'm happy with what I got. It's great, but it doesn't help us make a decision.
Well, I think our problem is that, yeah, they have the numbers, but to find the person that can give you the numbers is another issue.
It might be a bit of an issue, yes.
And they say you have a PG&E bill there, but they don't know what the maintenance bill is. So I'm kind of hesitant.
Yeah, the maintenance bill, I don't know what they're paying, but it may only come out 2 times a year.
I have no idea.
Two times for the thousand.
I have no idea.
That may be scheduled in the rest of the emergency. Yeah. What's the blue that we've got?
Where it changes.
That's where it changes, okay.
Yeah. And help me these when I start to review them. They're all titled the same thing, so what am I looking at to see?
So, one is a single axis tracker in models.
She had said that.
So I thought it would be a good idea to ask Dina, well, for the finance committee to start thinking about, regardless of the decision that we make with respect to moving plant one to plant two, et cetera, what are some thoughts for discussion regarding how do we pay, what are some strategies for paying for D9 in either scenario? And I thought what we wanted to start out with was how much do we as staff feel comfortable calling, directing from our reserves to be spent in some fashion towards this D-Night? And I'm going to turn it over to Dina to give you some of those figures.
Okay. So if the board selects option one, which is to refurbish plant one along with the denitrification project, then staff would like to contribute $1.746 million. That is the contingency amount for the project. Our reasoning for this is after discussions with Gregory yesterday, I asked him, if we crack open plant one, what is the potential that it would cost more than what is stated here? And he said, yes, that could happen. So that makes me a little nervous, and I want to make sure that we have cash to be able to pay for any of those extra things that we might find when we pop open plant one.
And I think that's the right direction to go. Plant one is 40 years old.
It is.
It's been in and out of operation, so when they open it up and start doing it, they are going to find something.
Yes.
How big that is, we have no idea.
We don't. We don't have any idea. And so that makes me a little bit nervous to then say, hey, we're going to put all of this towards it, and then what if we need to refinance again or we need to go out and get more money? We can have that cash to utilize for that, okay? So now if the board of directors select option two, which is to decommission Plant 1 and build new facilities at Plant 2, staff would like to contribute $3.249 million, the contingency amount for the project. Once the projects are complete, the board then can decide if you would like to... Sure. That was actually from...
The staff report.
That's the staff report from...
Pardon me?
Okay.
You're ahead of me.
Yeah. Once these projects are complete, the board can then decide if you'd like to utilize any remaining contingency money. And I'm still comfortable with $3.249 million to put towards the bond payment or for other projects. Some other things that I'd like to consider as well. Do you have any questions regarding that for the moment?
Why don't you continue? I've got
okay.
questions.
Some other things that I'd consider as well. If the board selects option one, we could bond the project for 20 years. This would cover the lifespan of that project and the plant, which is a 20-year lifespan. Then the staff and the board can decide in 20 years what we want to do with Plant 1. Do we want to continue to fix it again, or do we want to move it at that time? If the board then selects option 2, the board could finance the project over 35 years, which is less expense to the ratepayer, and it enables the district then to spread the cost to those who are going to be utilizing the services within that 35-year span. And so the life cycle of option number two is 40 years. So.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go for it.
What is our balance in reserves?
Okay, so our balance in reserves right now, so unrestricted reserves, unrestricted then, we have about $4.7 million of unrestricted reserves. What I plan to utilize were the capital reserves, which were the developer fees. And that's what I thought I was comfortable giving up to put towards this project. And so right now we have about $2.7 million there. And so we're borrowing the $2.7 million from those capital developer fees and then taking some money from unrestricted reserves. Yes.
So we have about... So your estimation about $4.7 million in a pot there that could be
could be used
to offset the total of $13.4 million.
Yes. That's correct.
So if we had 13.4 and we applied 4.7, we have about 11.7 left in that neighborhood. 8.7. And what would be, if we bonded $8.7 million for 20 years or 30 years, what would our bond cost be?
So right now at about a $12 million bond, I think we pay almost $800,000. So I would guess maybe about five or six, somewhere in there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. $6-$7 a month per equivalent dwelling unit, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because I look at these numbers and they're both staggering, but they are what they are. And I guess I'm a little concerned that the contingency is awfully high, but I kind of understand on plan one, I don't understand the plan two contingency.
Well, I think the plant one is obvious. A 15% it shows here is too low, but now there's other numbers being bantered back and forth. Mm-hmm. I think the reason that plant two is they haven't designed this thing yet. I think there's a lot of question marks, and we're having to look because of the time frame. We're having to look at this with an undesigned product, so the contingent becomes bigger.
Yeah.
And it could be that that's a reward because we're going to think it. Hopefully, we think the worst and gain a little bit back. But I think that's right.
You know,
and then in those costs too, I want to make sure that it's not only we've got design, we have construction, we have permitting.
Yes. Project management.
I'd kind of like to look at construction management.
Yep.
to make sure that we're strong in that, since we're kind of off on in new territory here.
Yes.
I'd like to get a real strong construction manager in there that can really be the owner's representative.
Yes.
And look over the contractor, look over the designer, mm-hmm. and try to help us through the inevitable conflicts that will arise. So I think I took out my thoughts.
So the 4.7, that's the total package in reserve.
Yes,
for
that's
this,
unrestricted.
Okay. And that is what we use when we have hook and pipes and all the rest.
We could use it. So
emergency stuff.
So we spend, and I think historically it's been going up, we spend $500,000 a year on broken pipes. I'm not sure that's water or wastewater.
I believe right now that's water. We do have a few on wastewater that we have to look at, and we're going to be
so
fixing.
So most of that
yes.
$500,000 is going to be on freshwater. Okay. Mm-hmm. So our exposure, if we tap in any of that 4.7, sounds like it's low. In other words, that 4.7 is an insurance policy to a degree. And if we dip into it too deep and then need that money because
right.
of some circumstances that we didn't expect,
correct.
Then we're going to be fine.
And what's if the, let's say, mm-hmm. this was the 4.7 is applied to this project, now what's the balance left for the
okay. So then I have more of just restricted funds.
Yeah.
When I have $1.8 million in straight emergency funds money.
On top of the 4.7?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I have, I believe it's almost $2 million in revolving funds, which you could move those, you know, if we really needed them, the board, we could come to the board of directors and
revolving.
We could. The revolving funds are infrastructure replacement funds, pump replacements, generator.
Yeah.
Certain words I missed, so I just added.
That's okay. And then I still have the capital reserve funds, which are the capacity and connection fees. Right now it's $2.7 million.
Okay,
so
we got $6 million still.
We do.
Which we could
yes.
maintain for these purposes, or even drip. You could slide some of that over into
you
a
could.
Project, option one or option two.
You could.
Without too much risk.
Yes.
Okay. So I think the real discussion for the board then is going to be selecting option one or two.
It is.
And then selecting how much
of our
down payment
yes.
versus how much to finance.
Yes.
I think it makes a lot of sense to finance it in that, you know, why should everybody today pay for this big old plant
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be gone in 5 or 10 years? Why should they pay for it and somebody 5 or 10 years down the road gets a freebie?
Yes.
So why not let the people that actually use the product or use the facility from year to year pay for it from year to year, sort of like rent or lease? Okay, well, I think when you give your presentation, if you can run those numbers by the board as simply as you can,
okay.
Let them wrestle with option one and two, and then figure out, I think once we figure out which option we want to proceed with,
okay.
then we can figure out how to finance it.
Mm-hmm.
My personal preference would be, you know, let's apply a reasonable amount of reserves to the project, and then do the rest on a loan.
Okay.
Which would make that a two-step process.
Yeah.
It would.
Anything else?
No, I think that was a great discussion just to kind of get the finance committee thinking about it. Would you like, so tonight we're going to talk about option one.
Yeah,
two.
Option one and two.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like Dee to be prepared to, you can bring
yeah.
her up to talk about it.
Yeah, if you could just do some real rough number crunching.
Okay.
If we apply $4 or $5 or $6 million
okay.
dollars of reserves to that, it leaves a balance that would require debt financing.
Okay.
And what's that going to be for the equivalent to a rolling unit per month?
Okay. Okay.
So let you know it's going to be $5, $10, $8. I don't know what it's going to be. But if you
okay.
could crunch those numbers, if you need to call Brandis, call them, give them a call. Maybe they can give you some, I don't know what the updated numbers are. But,
okay.
I don't think interest rates have changed too particularly much, at least in the last couple months.
And before we leave this one topic, and this is not on the agenda, but I just want to clarify because Bill Helfrich is here as a resident. We had talked about the pool and the possible findings, and I just want to take that off and say that I know you brought it up, and that if we're going to go for a bond, I think it's logical that we're not going to look that way on the pool, no matter which way we go with the pool, and that we would have to reconsider what we're going to, you know, what we're going to do with that. Make sense the way I said that?
Yes.
Okay.
Item three.
All right.
Public comment question. Public comment. This is just poor discussion, but what you got?
In listening to these reserve monies that are available, I don't want to argue with you, but they conflict like heck with your audited financial statements as of June 30, 2018. That audited statement says you have $6 million of unappropriated, unallocated, retained, earnings, and you have $4 million that you have appropriated. And you have, this just flipped the other way. You've only got $4 million to do with as you choose, and you've already allocated $6 million for other things. So I have a problem when the audited statements don't agree with what you're telling us the money you have.
Okay, item three, purchasing policy. Turn it over to Dina.
All right. I'm in the process of writing a new purchasing policy. I have reached out to the surrounding districts for their purchasing policy and their spending limits. And funny enough, Byron Bethany is doing the same thing that we're doing right now for the same reasons we're going to be doing it also. So one of the major policy changes that I'm going to be bringing back to you is increasing the spending limit. I've been increasing the spending limit from $10,000. I would like to increase it up to $50,000 for the general manager. The reason for this is that even though we are a small agency, that doesn't mean that the costs of products, services, and projects are small numbers. So we pay the same amount as Brentwood or San Francisco or any other city. And these costs are continuing to increase year over year. And the business process for invoices and for payments will still be the same. You will still see all invoices. You will still be approving all payments as we do now. I will also be outlining in this policy the process for goods and for purchasing goods and services. Right now, from goods and services for about $1,000 up to $50,000. Currently, our purchasing policy defines purchases from up to $100, and then the next span is $101 to $10,000, and this we feel is no longer conducive to conduct district business. The cost for goods and services are much higher today, like I just stated, and the policy that we have is written almost 10 years ago. And the staff feels that this old policy just slows productivity. So all these policy changes are in accordance with government code, and I've been looking at all other districts and their policies, and they are the same standard government code. So I'm almost done with it, but I don't have it to share with you yet, but I just wanted to know how you feel about that, and so that I can make any changes before I bring it back.
When's the last increase we've seen in this area?
Increase in what?
10,000 we're at now?
Oh, we're at 10,000 now.
Did you start at 10,000 or have we ever increased it?
I don't know if we've ever increased it because the policy was written before even Rick was here. Okay. So it's been that way since I've been here. So,
yeah. That's the only question I would ask.
Yep.
Seems very reasonable to me. Okay. How you distribute it among the staff, I'll look and see how you come up with that. But the numbers are not out of line from what I've seen other places, other similar water and wastewater districts. Matter of fact, many of them are much larger than this.
They are.
And we would bring the document back to you before
we would.
Before the board, right?
Yes.
And a lot of it, I think, depends on the size of their budget. You know, we're $12 million, some of them are $1 billion operations.
Right.
They have
right.
Different needs. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else?
That concludes our meeting.
Okay, next meeting will be here in a couple of months.
Very good.
All right, we're good.